I have often asked myself the question, what does it mean to be Indian? In recent weeks, I've also started asking myself the question, what does it mean to be an Indian citizen? We often take it for granted that we are citizens, but citizenship has so many rich shades of meaning. On the one hand, it's an administrative category, denoting the basic unit of the population of a state. On another, it's a term loaded with virtue and duty, which is why we speak of what it means to be a good citizen. The term citizen refers to a legal status. It also encloses an understanding of rights that the state is supposed to protect and entitlements that it might have granted one. It implies duties that one might have, definitely civic and perhaps social and political as well. It presupposes a sense of identity and belonging. It's a term especially loaded with meaning in modern times because being a citizen is different from being a subject. A handful of centuries ago, we were all subjects of some empire or fiefdom or the other. In 1947, when India gained political independence, we also gain the right for every Indian to turn from a subject to a citizen, empowered at an individual level to be masters of the state. Though I would argue that we still have the mentality of subjects. Citizenship is something that we all tend to take for granted. Although the events of the last weeks have forced many Indians to sit up and re-examine what the word means. What does it mean to be an Indian citizen? Although there are articles in the Constitution and laws passed by Parliament on this subject, one basic truth remains. Our citizenship is what we make of it.
Welcome to The Seen and the Unseen, our weekly podcast on economics, politics, and behavioral science. Please welcome your host, Amit Varma.
Welcome to The Seen and the Unseen. Before we get started, a quick announcement. My partnership with the good folks at IVM Podcast has ended, and as of this week, starting with this episode, I will be producing The Seen and the Unseen myself. We did 151 episodes together, and IVM was as much a labor of love for Amit Doshi and his team as The Seen and the Unseen has been for me, where the work has had to be its own reward because there hasn't been much else. Our parting was both inevitable and amicable, and I wish IVM the very best. You can check out their collection of amazing Indian podcasts at ivmpodcast.com. Now, on to this episode. We are recording this episode on December 20th, and India has been on fire over the last few days over a new bill that the government has passed called the Citizenship Amendment Bill, or the CAB. Taken in conjunction with the proposed National Register for Indian Citizens, this bill has certain implications that has many Indians worried, including me. The CAB and the NRC and the competing notions of citizenship that are now being argued in the public discourse all carry enormous historical baggage. We cannot understand these present times if we do not understand that history. To help unpack all of this, I've invited my friend, the historian Srinath Raghavan, back on the show. Srinath had last appeared on The Seen and the Unseen to discuss a troubled history of Kashmir and Article 370, and that episode turned out to be the most popular episode of The Seen and the Unseen so far. He's done three other fantastic episodes with me before that, all of which will be linked from the show notes at seenunseen.in. I'm glad he'll join me here again today. Srinath, welcome to the show.
Good to be back on the new Seen and the Unseen.
Yeah, Srinath, the last time you came here, it was on the back of a crisis about Article 370. And the time before that you came here, it could be argued that it presaged perhaps a future crisis, the India-Pakistan conflict, where we, you know, after Balakot, we discussed the strategic implications of that. And we're in the middle of a bit of a crisis now also, aren't we?
Oh, yeah. And looks like this is a show for crisis and crisis management,
yeah. Yeah. Well, so, you know, the thing is, a lot of people are asking, like when I was tweeting about this, a common question that people seem to have been programmed to ask almost, especially on day one, it almost seemed as if the IT cell had asked their anonymous handles to all, comment asking protesters like us, what are the students protesting about? Where the implication was that there's really nothing to protest. This bill has something to do with illegal migrants and all that. But the sort of historical implications of this are far greater if you look at the sort of larger picture. And one of the things that's sort of struck me over the last 3 or 4 days is that, you know, when the bill was passed, I thought, okay, we are living in really dark times. Things are getting worse very fast. But I have been enormously heartened by the protests that have been happening in the last 3 days. And I think in a sense, in a perverse way, the bill has had the opposite effect, whereas you would imagine it, in conjunction with the NRC to take down the number of citizens in the country. I think there are actually now suddenly many more citizens, so to say, if we use a distinction between thin citizenship, which is, the legal status, and thick citizenship, where you're actually involved with your nation. And people are suddenly taking their citizenship very seriously.
Well, certainly it seems to have catalyzed a largely unplanned, spontaneous set of protest movements across the country. And I think it's very interesting that this protest seems to have a geographic reach, a sort of an institutional base in universities, not just of the old public universities, but, in technological institutions, in institutions of management, in private universities. All of it suggests that there is a breadth and a depth to this feeling of antipathy towards what is being imposed on the country by way of amendment of the Citizenship Amendment Bill. And I think people have caught on to what is fundamentally problematic about the bill itself, which is that it effectively discriminates against the Muslims in India and de jure reduces them to second-class status in this country. And that they feel is unjust, it's incorrect, and it goes against the fundamental tenets of Indian identity, as they intuitively seem to understand was enshrined in the Constitution. Which I think is very heartening because, as you've been saying, we have witnessed a number of important pieces of legislation, other kinds of court verdicts happening this year, right? You had the Article 370 of Kashmir being abolished, the state being, divided into two union territories. Then you had the Supreme Court verdict on the Ram Janmabhoomi Ayodhya issue where, on the one hand, the destruction of the Babri Mosque was condemned, but on the other hand, the people who destroyed it effectively have been given possession.
It was both condemned and condoned.
Exactly, right? So in a sense, coming on the back of this series of things which has happened, it is quite interesting that people have looked upon this as a moment where some of their fundamental questions of status, rights and identity, the bundle of things that go into the making of the notion of citizenship as really being tested at this point of time. And it seems clear that they have decided that it's time to stand up.
Right. And, one of the things which you're obviously going to do in this episode is talk about the historical background of all of this, both with the nature of citizenship, how it was in colonial India, the sort of battles in the Constituent Assembly at the time of independence to define it and set a direction forward, and what it sort of revealed about the idea of India, the pluralistic idea of India that was then dominant among the framers of our constitution, and problems of Assam and so on. So we'll look at the entire historical package, and we will also at the end cycle back to the present and talk about what's going on now and what the implications are. But before we do that, I want you to sum up for me, what are we protesting about exactly? On the face of it, what many people seem to are saying on CAB, and I get constantly on family WhatsApp groups, I get messages about it, that what's the problem? This is only about refugees from other countries. It doesn't affect our citizenship. Why should we be worried?
Well, I think we should be worried because the bill and the act effectively is very clearly discriminatory. It creates explicitly stated discriminatory provisions which leave out Muslims from getting citizenship as persecuted refugees from other countries. It leaves out certain other countries from the ambit of India's neighborhood. For instance, it leaves out Tamils who have come from Sri Lanka and who are still living in refugee camps in Tamil Nadu, maybe for about 25, 30 years now. So there is a range of exclusions, all of which militate against the guarantee of equality to all enshrined in Article 14 of the Indian Constitution. And in that sense, this bill seems patently unconstitutional. But more than anything else, it seems to strike a chord with people that here is a piece of legislation which is so blatantly discriminatory, which attempts to reduce a very large number of people in this country to effectively a new category of citizenship. And in that sense, there have been parallels which have been evoked in a number of fora with the Nuremberg laws of Germany, right? And it's worth recalling what those Nuremberg laws were about. The Nuremberg laws were, one of the Nuremberg laws effectively said that you could only be German if you're effectively of German ancestry. And that German ancestry was defined as excluding the Jews. People were prohibited from getting married to Jews under the Nuremberg laws. So in a sense, it was an attempt to preserve a certain majoritarian notion of German identity by consigning Jews to second-class citizenship. And that parallel, I think, has been evoked a number of times.
It may not be accurate in all its particulars, but I think it strikes a chord because it is precisely that kind of a problem. And let's also face it that we have seen similar things happening in our own neighborhood in more recent times. You only have to think about the Rohingya problem as it emerged in the context of Myanmar and the grotesque tragedy into which it has devolved. Even as we are speaking, you know, there's a trial going on in the International Court of Justice, and none less than Aung San Suu Kyi has had to show up in order to defend the country. So I think people are worried about what kind of a path are we embarking on by bringing in this piece of legislation. Now, the CAA, the amended act, itself may seem exclusionary, innocuous, and so on. But it is effectively a pincer movement when you combine it with the proposed National Register of Indian Citizens. Now, this National Register of Indian Citizens actually was proposed by the Vajpayee government in 2003. Right? There's a citizenship rules of 2003, which promulgated the process through which this was to be done. Subsequently, when the UPA government came in, they set that aside and focused more on other projects like Aadhaar as a way of giving identity and, you know, enabling people to claim their rights and so on. But what the current government wants to do effectively is to first bring in the CAB, which then says that then we will move on to the NRC exercise of enumerating who's an Indian citizen, which will have various kinds of requirements. As the case of Assam has shown, there are a lot of people, both Hindu and Muslim, who will be unable to produce the required documents in order to meet the threshold. But the amended Citizenship Act will allow everyone but the Muslims to go through a process for claiming citizenship and eventually reach that destination, whereas Muslims who may be unable to have the requisite documentation in order to be able to do that will then be consigned into some kind of a legal limbo. On top of it, we now know from newspaper reporting that instructions have been given to various state governments to open internment camps in various areas, right? We are speaking here in Mumbai, and there is a camp coming up in Nerul, as the, you know, the newspapers
I wasn't
reported.
Aware of this. Wow.
Yeah, and the newspapers reported it some months ago. And what is going to be the status of people who are there? What kind of rights will they have? What kind of freedoms will they be allowed to? In fact, if you look at the detention centers which have been on operation in Assam for some years now, even normal jail manual provisions are not being followed in those kinds of things. There is a report done by Harsh Mandir a few years ago after a visit to these things, which is worth reading. So I think if you put the new amended Citizenship Act along with the proposed NRC, you are effectively attempting to consign a very large number of people in this country to second-class citizenship and possibly throw them into a legal limbo. And I think that is something that all of us have to be worried about. I would, in fact, go a little further.